AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Bank stability is in the headlines as the Federal Reserve meets to decide the next move to drag down inflation. And EPA's new WOTUS rule already faces a court challenge. We've got perspective on both those issues on the first full day of spring. Happy National Ag Day.
Live from the first glorious morning of spring via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Mary Thomas Hart from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Then it's Jackson Takish from Farmer Mac. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, man, I tell you what, it was a glorious first morning of spring. Stepped out on the deck with a cup of coffee this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear the wood ducks down on the creek.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear the turkeys gobbling.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen any turkey buzzards yet, so I don't trust either one of them.
It sounds like you might have rice cooking in the microwave, like maybe a three-day beard and you don't plan to shave.
Yeah, man.
Kind of a feeling.
It's a great day to be alive.
Heck yeah, brother. Heck yeah.
You know it. You know it. It is a great day. Yep. And, hey, happy National Egg Day to all the farmers and
Indeed.
Producers and ranchers
yep.
and farm workers and... anybody that's involved in agriculture, today's your day.
Perhaps
good for you. Thank you for what you do. Hey, why not?
Why not?
Let's throw it in there.
Let's party. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man. I know that you've got some news and some perspective coming up on the waters of the U.S. implementation, court challenges, and so on. We've got some great perspective coming your way, some diverging perspectives mm-hmm. on today's show regarding the WOTUS court decision that was released yesterday. So it's an interesting take that we're going to get into today on the show. Looking forward to all of that perspective. And then Jackson Takish, with what is happening. I mean, the American Bankers Association is meeting today at a time when the Fed is going into lockup for the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, at a time when we're still trying to figure out just how the banks out there will weather this latest storm out there,
mm-hmm.
and just how big of a storm is it? You know, mm-hmm. how much of a crisis is it? So Jackson from Farmer Mac is going to bring in his analysis and perspective to that here today.
I think what we should do is maybe do what we did with the last banking crisis and just sort of put a Band-Aid on the situation, you know, and hope that in 10 to 12 years, the whole thing doesn't explode again in similar fashion. I think that's the best course forward.
Kick it 10 or 12 years down the road.
Why not?
I think that's what we did 10 or 12 years ago.
What? That doesn't sound like us.
You know, here it is again. Surprise, surprise, huh?
Uh-huh, yeah. This is what I'm saying. Yep.
I know. It's perfectly done.
That's what they're going to do, though, dude.
Recurring.
I guarantee it.
Yeah,
I guarantee
you're probably right. You are probably right. We'll get Jackson's take on it coming up here in a little bit. All right, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, we had a ton of export sales reported on the daily reporting last week. We've got another one already this week. Not a huge one, 136,000 metric tons of corn to China during the 22-23 marketing year, but China really showing up here on the daily sales.
Yeah, last week I think the total was 2.1-something million metric tons.
Yep.
We've already got a sale again this week. This gets back to what we've talked about on the afternoon show a few times, Davis. U.S. Mm-hmm. corn is very competitive. There is increasing concern that, okay, maybe USDA did go a little bit too far in the latest cut to the export estimate on the balance sheets, but we haven't caught up to the pace where we need to be to get to USDA's numbers yet. Yeah. So I don't know if you can make that case or not.
Well, Chip, S&P Global released their U.S. acreage intentions from their recent survey. They reportedly estimate corn at 90.9 million acres. That would be up 2.3 million from last year. And soybeans at 88.2 million acres, up 1.4 million. The prospective plantings report right around the corner, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, 179.1 on the combined corn and soybean acres there. The consensus seems to be coming in at 180 million or lower on the combined total. So, you know, and both estimates are up from a year ago because of the reduction in prevented planted acres. So it kind of makes sense.
Well, Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin will hold a second day of meetings today in Moscow. The two leaders are working to increase ties between their two countries in the face of economic, diplomatic, and military opposition from the West, led by the United States. Xi invited Putin to visit China sometime this year, while the two are expected to sign a series of pacts to discuss cooperation over Russia's war in Ukraine. Interestingly, Russia has surpassed Saudi Arabia to become China's top oil supplier, according to government customs data, with imports rising 23.8% in the first 2 months of 2023. And there was just too much to put in this paragraph here, but there's also talk of like a grain highway or something from Russia down to China.
Yeah, exactly. There's all kinds of developments on this front, including that China has been supplying Russia with drones.
Yeah.
Through all of the conflict is what it sounds like. So it's getting deeper and deeper is what's happening.
Those two rascals are getting awful cozy. Well, a veto by President Joe Biden upholds a Labor Department rule allowing retirement fund managers to consider the environmental and social impacts, or your ESG, of their investments. Earlier this month, Congress passed a bill to scrap the rule, with Republicans calling it a, quote, woke policy. The Biden administration's version of the Waters of the U.S. rule went into effect yesterday. National Cattlemen's Beef Association expressed displeasure in a district court decision to deny a preliminary injunction. While a ruling by a U.S. district court for the Southern District of Texas halted the implementation of WOTUS in Texas and Idaho. Speaking more broadly, American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval said, quote, the judge recognized the rule likely oversteps the EPA's authority under the Clean Water Act, which creates uncertainty for the farmers and ranchers who must navigate the complicated regs. These legal challenges send a clear message to EPA that it should rewrite WOTUS to limit its scope to navigable waters. I'm interested to hear what NCBA's Mary Thomas Hart has to say on this.
And we will find out in the next segment. No question.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, port employers are accusing unionized dock workers of slowing container handling at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. According to the Wall Street Journal, the new barbs suggest that tensions in the long-running negotiations are getting worse and points to the potential for deeper disruptions at the nation's busiest gateway for imported consumer goods. In other news, President Biden today will put nearly 514,000 acres of public lands off limits to development using his authority under the 1906 Antiquities Act. And finally, a United Nations panel of scientists said there's a feasible but narrow pathway to avoid the worst effects of climate change. To do so, the world's nations must together cut greenhouse gas emissions 60% by 2035. We're not going to get everybody on board with this. This is the thing. This is the thing.
Yeah. You are exactly right. We're not.
There will be
get
no
everybody
global
on board
effort.
With it. Even the U.S. and Europe can do extraordinary efforts to make it happen. But if China and India don't come along, it's tough going. AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The 2023 Bracket Busters Challenge presented by Case IH is underway. Who's still in the game? Find out. Head to agweb.com now through April 3rd to check the leaderboard.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis Michelson is here as well.
I am?
Yes, you are. On this first full day of spring, happy National Ag Day, Davis.
Glorious. Happy National Ag Day to you and to all of our brothers in the ag industry.
Excellent.
And sisters, everybody.
And sisters, that's right.
Y'all come on
that's
in. Right. Yeah.
All right, including Mary Thomas Hart. She is the Chief Counsel, Government Affairs at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Mary Thomas, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, glad that you are here because times are changing again, and in many ways, we're going backwards in time with the Biden administration's new rules on the waters of the U.S. So let's just lay the groundwork here and help us get a full understanding of what changed yesterday when the new WOTUS rules were implemented.
Sure thing. And yeah, I think that's the best place to start. So, you know, there's certainly been a lot of regulatory whiplash over the last, 10, 20, 50 years, however you want to go back. I think since the time that the Clean Water Act was enacted, we've had about 13 different regulatory definitions of WOTUS. And the rule that went into effect on Monday is just the latest example of that. So the Biden administration and, their attempt to write a WOTUS definition, I think, tried to find some middle ground between the 2015 Obama rule and the 2020 Trump era navigable waters protection rule. Unfortunately, in attempting to find middle ground, they got rid of a lot of the bright line definitions that made it easy to interpret, what's in and what's out, what's subject to federal jurisdiction. And so now a lot of features, whether you're talking about ephemeral features that only carry water after it rains or isolated features that may be, pretty far away from traditional navigable waters, we don't know how those are going to be treated. And they're going to require case-by-case determinations from regulators, which is not only going to be time-intensive, but also costly.
Yeah, it's that case by case. When there is a national rule like this, the national rule should not be, we will determine on a case by case basis what you can and cannot do on your piece of property, right?
That's exactly our position. I think that our take is if there's something that might need to be regulated, then leave it to the states to make that determination, right? Okay. Limit the federal government's authority to only those features that are actually contributing to downstream water quality, right? Your major waterways, Great Lakes, oceans, traditional navigable waters that really contribute to interstate commerce, and then the features that most closely impact the water quality of those features, the wetlands that are directly abutting those features, or the tributaries that flow year round into those features. Yeah. But beyond that, when it starts to get questionable about, how a feature impacts overall water quality, leave it to the states. We're not saying don't manage those waters at all. We're just, I think, trying to go through a line drawing exercise, right? Of who's in the best position to effectively manage those features.
Okay. So for an average landowner, farmer, rancher, in most states, we'll get to that here in a moment, but in most states, what does that mean for them today?
Yeah, today, I think my word of caution to landowners across the country is, you know, if you have a water infrastructure project or, you know, a water kind of, if you're planning to manipulate the movement of water on your land in any way, talk to somebody before you start, you know, reach out, get some technical assistance. Even if you know, want to go to your Soil and Water Conservation District or your NRCS office, talk to somebody, get someone to lay eyes on that feature, and have a conversation about what might be required. Because I think, you know, what we got caught in the last time we had a pretty burdensome WOTUS definition under the Obama rule, we had some producers that got caught in some gotcha enforcement actions, right? Producers that were doing things that, you know, we consider very normal agricultural practices, building stock ponds, maintaining grass waterways, and were told that they needed additional permitting in order to carry out those projects. So instead of, you know, going out and doing something and assuming that you're going to be fine, I recommend having a conversation first.
Man, oh man. There are so many projects that are under construction right now that are part of an effort to provide cleaner water downstream that, unfortunately, the rule as it stands right now could put those projects at risk, right?
That's an excellent point, and that's the point that we continue to make in our comments and in our litigation efforts. You know, I think grass waterways are an excellent example of that, right? That's certainly a project that is done to improve overall water quality and stability of those water features long term. It doesn't have a negative impact on the environment, but if a producer is required to spend a lot of extra time and a lot of extra money getting a permit to implement that conservation practice, then they're maybe less likely to do so. Or, you know, we certainly appreciate if they take the extra time and spend the extra money to implement that practice, but they shouldn't have to go through all of that regulatory red tape to do something that's ultimately going to improve the natural resources in their land and in their community.
Amen. Amen to that. To keep the efforts out there voluntary and proactive, you've got to make it simple for these producers to, or the landowners to pursue them. Okay, the action by the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas. What does that do to the status of the new WOTUS rule?
Great question. So, you know, we filed suit, NCBA and a coalition of other national trade associations filed suit in the Southern District of Texas as soon as we got an announcement from the Biden administration that it had a final rule, right? But the day that it was posted in the Federal Register, we were on the courthouse steps. And so our first kind of push was to attempt getting a preliminary injunction, which would basically put the rule on hold, or the definition on hold, until we were able to litigate the case, right? So it's kind of just a first out the gate, try to get the court to pause everything while we, you know, advance the litigation. Unfortunately, the judge denied our request for a nationwide preliminary injunction, but granted a PI in two states. So if you're a producer or a landowner in Texas or Idaho, you're not subject to the Biden rule. I'm not going to say good to go, but you certainly are not subject to this new, I would say, more confusing rule that was finalized under the Biden administration.
Okay, that just leaves me more confused. How can you decide that for Texas and Idaho and not for the other 48?
So in addition to our national kind of trade association coalition, the attorneys general from Texas and Idaho were also involved in the litigation. So, you know, we made a pretty broad request, right, for a preliminary injunction that would cover all 50 states based on the fact that for NCBA, for Farm Bureau, National Pork Producers, National Association of Home Builders, we have members spread across the country, right? No one state's preliminary injunction is going to protect all of our members, all of our supply chains. But for the states of Texas and Idaho, they were able to go in and just ask for a limited preliminary injunction that only applies to their state. For a conservative judge like Judge Brown, who maybe isn't as keen to grant a nationwide preliminary injunction, it's a much easier hurdle to grant a PI to one state than it is to grant a sweeping nationwide injunction. We don't see it. Certainly we see it as you know, maybe losing this one small battle. But I think in the opinion that Judge Brown wrote, he certainly indicated that he has a lot of issues with the Biden rule. And I think that bodes well for our litigation down the road.
Yeah, that's why, and Davis had this in the news, that's why AFBF President Zippy Duval said the judge recognized the new rule likely oversteps EPA's authority under the Clean Water Act. That's got to at least give some hope that there are that there is the potential for a nationwide injunction at some point.
Yeah, so I think the next step is going to be certainly involve waiting for the Supreme Court to issue their decision in the Sackett versus EPA case, because if they issue a decision that in practice overturns this rule, then we don't have to worry about directly litigating the case anymore. But if we have to continue litigating this rule, then I think that Judge Brown has certainly given us a kind of appetizer, a preview for how he views this rule. And two things that I think are worth pointing out. One, he has some real issues with the significant nexus test, and he also has some issues with the regulation of interstate waters.
Gotcha. Mary Thomas, great breakdown on what's going on. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks. Y'all have a good day.
You bet. That's Mary Thomas Hart, Chief Counsel, NCBA. Wow. Jackson Takish up next.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, the bit of a upside recovery that we saw in the overnight has definitely faded away on us. What's going on?
Yeah, I'll start with corn chip. We had another daily corn sale to China this morning. So a couple boatloads went out the door to China. That's in addition to the 2.1 million tons that they purchased via daily sales last week. But that isn't translating into any price strength, trading about a penny or two lower here at mid-morning in the corn market. A lot of that is tied to the wheat market. Winter wheat contracts are lower, led by the SRW contracts, and soy oil is selling off, trading about 150 points lower here at mid-morning.
Yeah, that's even with the crude oil market trading to the upside.
Yeah, so there's been quite a bit of movement in soy oil. You know, just a lot of volatility here recently, and the spreading with the meal market is active today, with soy oil sharply lower, and then the meal market trading solidly to the upside.
All right, very good. Take us over to the livestock trade. What's going on?
Well, you know, we're seeing some recovery trade in both live cattle and feeder cattle. So, you know, they were down yesterday, up today. That back and forth trade, I think, is probably what we're going to see until we get some confirmation on cash cattle trade. Now, you know, the April futures, they went discount to the cash market last week's average cash price and still trading there this morning. So that's an interesting development because the fundamentals in that market, as you well know, are fully bullish. Yeah. But the market price action doesn't necessarily reflect that. On the hog side of things, you know, they tried to work to the upside, but mostly weaker tone, just can't get out of their own way right now.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis, and interesting, you know, differing perspectives on the ruling by the Southern District or the Southern District of Texas Court on the WOTUS. We'll talk more about that at the end of the show.
For sure.
We need to get into it a little bit more because right now, Jackson Takish, Chief Economist, Senior Director of Strategy, Research, and Analytics at Farmer Mac, joins us. Jackson, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me once again.
Yes, glad that you are here. Jackson, this is one of the strangest doggone times. I mean, it doesn't happen very often that we get into situations like we are in right now. Explain the current crisis in the banking system. How did it happen?
Well, yeah, I was gonna say, did something happen? Did I miss something?
But, no, I think you know.
I think you're referring to a small number of banks maybe running into some challenges that have caused the FDIC to step in and maybe do some bank failures, takeovers, those kinds of things. You know, and honestly, I hesitate to even call it a crisis at this point. You look at the number of institutions that have run into problems, and it's a small number at this point. But you don't want to underplay some of the things that are going on because they are important, and it's great for people to understand what's happening at these different institutions. And it all comes down to you know, sort of like two main themes, one being asset quality. So what's in those portfolios, and in some cases, overexposure to certain industries that have been under a lot of volatility, or bad bets on some loans, or, you know, maybe even crypto, right? So those things kind of show up and can cause disruptions to financial institutions. The other thing, asset liability management, which in the ag world, I mean, we experienced a lot of asset liability management in the 1980s, disruptions to the lending environment in the 1980s. So that's one I think we're all familiar with. Hey, sometimes banks borrow at with one type of debt instrument or deposits, and they take on assets with another type of profile. And when those two things start to move in different directions, you can run into problems. And that's what happened to, say, a bank like Silicon Valley, where the deposits started to leave and the assets were just too hard to unload, and they ran into some liquidity problems.
Yeah, in the Silicon Valley Bank, that was an old-fashioned run on the bank, right? People wanted their money.
Yeah. So you know, deposits, people started to call up those deposits, and the bank management had to look at what assets do we have to liquidate. And some of those assets were long-term treasuries. And when interest rates go up, as it turns out, you know, prices and the value of those instruments go down, right? So this is a relationship between the interest rates and the value of a bond or a fixed income security. And I think they learned, hey, when you raise interest rates by 450 basis points in a little over a year, perhaps that influences the value of some of the assets that are under management.
Yeah, absolutely. The you know, next on my list of questions for you was, how much of a crisis is it? And you've already answered that for the most part here, but what are the risks going forward from here? Can this trickle down into some of the regional banks? And if it trickles into the regional banks, it's going to get into the smaller banks.
Yeah, I think that the risk that everyone's focused on, the Fed in particular, is that contagion from one group of lenders into the others. And we all learned that lesson in the 2008 financial crisis. Hey, this was just a problem with mortgage-backed securities, right? Like, nobody has a problem with that. And it turns out they were buried in all balance sheets. And then there were people who had invested in the banks who had invested in those mortgage-backed securities. So there was, contagion that caused the ultimate problem during the financial crisis. That's the question today. And I think, the Fed has done a lot to stem the risk of contagion to other financial institutions, really standing up that bank transfer program to allow them to quickly access very liquid assets in the event that people did feel like they wanted to move some deposits around. So I think that partially stepping in and saying, hey, we to allow their liquidity very quickly helped any sort of contagion that immediately started to spread to other parts of the banking sector. But there's always that risk. Hey, you've got something in a balance sheet where that's related to Silicon Valley or an event of Silicon Valley or Signature Bank, right? So these things take a little bit of time to work their way out. I think the Fed's quick act and a lot of the risk to greater contagion in the U.S. banking sector.
Okay. All right. Going to give your signal just a little bit of a time to catch up because you are breaking up on us just a little bit, Jackson. What I'm interested in next is there are comparisons to what happened back in 2008 to what is happening right now. And I keep hearing that 2008 was a solvency issue. What we're dealing with now is a liquidity issue. Is that the right way to describe it?
Yes, I do think what we're dealing with today is more of a liquidity issue. And that's why the Fed's program to sort of stand up and give greater access to cash, the marketable securities and treasuries that they have on their balance sheet, that's why it's such an important program to get started quickly and really hopefully stem the tide of any contagion across the banking sector.
Okay. Man, this does not make it easy on Jay Powell and the rest of the Fed governors, does it? I mean, they're meeting today and tomorrow trying to balance an effort to bring the inflation rate down to 2% against the risk of lowering liquidity by raising interest rates in the banking crisis. Man, talk about a deer in the headlights situation. Does it kind of handcuff what the Fed can do?
It certainly puts them in a tougher position, right? So you've got your price risk on one side and you've got your financial risk on the other side. And if you start to pull the string in either direction, you can't have them both, right? So you gotta have to make some tough choices. Fortunately, I think the last meeting they raised by 25 basis points or a quarter percent. I think another quarter percent probably doesn't do too much damage. So whether or not they hold or raise 25 basis points, it's probably not enough to cause irreparable harm in either direction. So I think they've done a lot of the heavy lifting, getting up to 4.5% where they are today. An extra quarter point or a hold at 4.5% probably not going to do too much damage in either direction. But you are spot on. They have a weird choice to make. Do you want to stem price and asset prices and inflation, or do you want to sort of save any additional pain in the financial sector? And they kind of have to make that decision with a limited amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Jackson, some of the comments from Treasury Secretary Yellen about assuring and potentially expanding FDIC coverage for depositors. Is that something that makes sense to you? Or, as Davis was talking about earlier, does that just further kick the can down the road on some of the issues that we need to deal with?
Well, there's going to be a lot of analysis and thought put into any sort of decision like that to expand FDIC insurance. I do think it's important to create a lot of positive psychology around the banks, because a part of any run on the bank is a psychological one about the safety of my money, right? I have assets at that bank. I am worried about them. And sometimes that worry is founded and sometimes it's a bit unfounded, right? There can be times where the psychological games get played and people move their money around and they didn't need to. in some of these, you know, maybe runs on banks are avoidable. I do think what the policymakers are do is find smart ways to limit the amount of sort of contagion or negative psychology around a bank and make it a more stable environment for people to transact. I think that's the ultimate goal. Will that have other unintended, you know, consequences? For sure. But ultimately, I think that's where the Treasury Secretary and the Federal Reserve to, you know, sort of balance some of the pros and cons of such an expansion of FDIC insurance.
Okay. All right. The Fed's still got this long game that they need to consider, right? And that is controlling inflation. Do you have a guess on what the announcement is going to be when we get the Fed announcement tomorrow?
I'm not going to make a guess. If you look at the markets today, yeah. I think the markets are betting pretty heavily on a quarter point raise tomorrow when we get that announcement. I think that's probably a fairly wise bet, just given how, you know, Chair Powell has sort of positioned himself as a fighter of inflation, and that seems to be the number one goal. And some of the financial markets have calmed down after dealing with some of the news around bank failures for you know, 10 days or so. So I think that's probably where the chair is going to lead and the FOMC is going to lean tomorrow.
Okay, Jackson, give me 30, 45 seconds on the condition of rural banking right now.
Well, honestly, I think some of these community banks, regional banks are as strong as they've ever been. If you look at the health of capital, the strong earnings, you know, really strong asset quality. So in a lot of ways, I think the banking sector is extremely healthy, particularly as you think about ag lending. When you look at the number and rate of delinquencies in those ag portfolios, the ag economy is coming off of a very, very strong period of high earnings and strong incomes, helping, I think, keep the you know, those regional community banks and ag lenders in a very good position to weather these kinds of storms. So I think overall, the banking sector, particularly around ag lending, is quite healthy. And you know, farmers are out there looking for capital. Bankers are out there providing the capital. And I think they're both doing so in a very responsible manner.
Jackson, those are exactly the kind of perspectives and analysis that we needed right now. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
All right. That's Jackson Takish, Chief Economist at Farmer Mac Davis. And I will be right back.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory. First day of spring, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, first full day of spring. First morning of spring. That's
first morning of spring, yeah. So, did we ever get it figured out with the robins and the snow and the head or the
Remember?
I can't make heads or tails of this one.
I don't know either. No. I don't know either. But the bird activity is definitely picking up out here in the Florey timber.
Yeah. Same here. Same here. I have limited timber, mostly mulberries where there should be a garden. But, you know, there are birds in the timber here, too.
Gotcha.
Some really, really pertinent conversations this morning. We began with Mary Thomas Hart from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. But in the news, we featured comments from AFBF, from their president, Zippy Duval. I don't know that the divergence is subtle there, but definitely meaningful.
Two different perspectives. Yep, absolutely. Two different perspectives. Mary Thomas at NCBA is looking at it as, doggone it, we didn't win our case because we wanted to have a national injunction on the implementation of the new WOTUS rules. On the other hand, Zippy Duval at AFBF says, hey, because the AGs in Texas and Idaho got involved in it, the judge granted the injunction on those, which is a strong indication that EPA is overreaching. And I think that if other states would decide to get involved in a case later, that federal district judges might decide the same thing. The problem is, the big problem, I think, and Davis, we've talked about this before, but we need this ruling on Sackett versus EPA, the Supreme Court ruling on Sackett versus EPA. If we can get that ruling in place, the parameters, I think, will then be provided so that a definitive final rule on what constitutes a water of the U.S. and how far EPA's reach can go, I think that's going to be determined in this case. And
we've talked about the Sackett v. EPA case quite a bit. Yeah. Essentially, what that would do maybe is give a barometer or even a proxy for an appeal to the Supreme Court on WOTUS directly. Am I thinking about that right?
I think what this one case and the Supreme Court decision on this will do, it's not, I don't know if proxy is the right word or not, Davis. It might be, but I think this case decision, this court decision, will give us an explanation of how the decision was on how the court came to the decision. And that explanation of how the court came to the decision will then provide the parameters on how the rule will be interpreted going forward.
Okay. Well, and maybe I'm just a freedom loving Ameriholic. Okay, dude. Like,
amen,
I can remember,
brother.
Dude, when she's talking about, if you're going to do something in your waterway, you better talk to somebody first.
Yeah.
Dude, one of my favorite smells is the scent in the air. You get it in the spring and you get it in the fall. Burning fence lines, burning ditches, burning waterways.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you can even do that anymore, can you? Without being at risk?
No, you can. You can. It's best to make sure that is a planned burn and that you've contacted the right people and all of that.
I mean, you want to have plenty of beers on hand. I mean, you make the appropriate preparations. Come on.
Maybe a few tanks of water just to control things too. You know?
I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. admittedly, the cooler does help.
It happens. But seriously, though, I don't like the sound of, you better talk to somebody before you do something on your own land.
Right.
I don't like that at all, dude.
Well, and you see, that's what the Sackett versus EPA is really kind of all about. It is going to break it down to when you have to talk to somebody to be in compliance with the Clean Water Act. It's the bottom line.
And she gave some suggestions, but it doesn't seem like there's any single authority that she pointed to that
yet.
Says, okay, here's the 800 number if you're going to do something that you think you might need.
Yeah, you start
your
with
back
the state NRCS
on.
Office, and after that, they'll give you direction on who you need to talk to next.
Yeah, it's a whole interesting thing. And she sort of leaned into sort of states' rights on this on this issue as well, which that makes me feel a little better.
Yes,
like,
it does.
That's a sensible approach to me because, you know, not all states are the same, obviously. And if we can get an injunction in Texas and Idaho, to me, that maybe suggests that there is a little glimmer of hope, a crack in the door here.
Yeah.
That we may be able to get some states' rights involved in this.
Exactly. That's exactly what Zippy Duval from AFBF is implying.
Yes. Yep. Jackson Takish, man, he's got a handle on this, dude.
Oh, yeah, very good handle. The one thing that I want to get everybody to kind of, you know, focus on there was his, you know, last minute assessment of rural banking and the debt to assets and how rural bankers and ag lenders right now are on solid footing.
Yes.
And I think that's really important for everyone to keep in mind as the government deals with what's going on in some of the other sectors of banking. All right. Kate, thanks so much for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Darren Fessler from Lakefront Futures. Tomorrow morning, conversation with agronomist Dr. Lee Breeze from North Dakota, right here on AgriTalk.